For me, it's all about being real and being open, honest and vulnerable. And if you do that, and if we can teach every Aussie bloke to do that, then we're in a much better place.
Whether it's the clothes you wear to work or a metaphor for putting up a front, we all wear a uniform. But often there's a lot going on behind the uniform, and many of us are reluctant to express how we are really feeling.
Each week on Behind the Uniform, Dr. Izzy Smith and Captain Hugo Tuvey will be joined by a special guest as they talk openly and honestly about their experiences with mental health. Nothing will be off limits, so prepare yourself for tears, laughter and goosebumps.
Hello everybody and welcome back to Behind the Uniform. I'm Hugo and as always I'm joined by my lovely co-host Izzy. How are you going, Iz?
I'm great, Hugo. I've had almost a week off work, which is heaven, and I don't know what else to say. No news is good news.
Well, that's good for you, Iz, because for those listening, Izzy does work 80-hour weeks as a doctor in the ICU, and then she has a week off, which is pretty phenomenal. And look, our guest today, we're both pretty excited about.
Ridiculously excited. On the way, I was like, I think I want to adopt this person as like an uncle. Would that be weird if I asked?
And you can probably hear him laughing in the background, and his name is Gus Warland, and he is a media personality. He's an absolute sports fanatic, which I understand the Sydney Roosters is your go-to team.
Oh, yeah.
And you're a mental health advocate, obviously, first and foremost. Proud father. And you've done amazing work with a foundation that you've started essentially from the ground up called Gotcha for Life, which is an amazing initiative, amazing foundation. And ultimately, you know, from my limited experience with you, Gus, and the people I've spoken to, you really wear your heart on your sleeve, which I think is the amazing thing and amazing attribute to have. And you're also, I don't think, you strike me as the type of guy that you probably would be pretty hard-pressed to find someone say a bad word about you, Gus. So thank you so much for joining us on Behind the Uniform and welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Iz, and thanks, Hugo. It's nice to be here.
No, it's, like we said, we are excited. And look, like we do with every guest, and sort of to start the episode off, we just want to ask you, when Gus Warland is at your most happiest, what are you doing? Or who are you with? What are you doing?
Eating, probably. I love eating. And
is that apple cinnamon scroll you've got there?
Yeah, exactly. My absolute favourite place is surrounded by my family. So that's my three children, Jack, Ella and Abby, and now their partners. So you see, you guys are too young to understand, but when you see your own children with someone that at the time, right now, they're totally in love with and they can see themselves spending their time with them, you see the best of them and you see a different side of them and you think, oh, this person that I didn't know 6 months ago or 2 years ago is bringing out a whole different part of my child that I've never seen before. That's pretty special. So surrounded with them, my mum and my wife, sitting down at the Austrian restaurant in Terry Hills, having a big schnitzel and just chatting and laughing and talking over each other. That's my happy place.
And a nice whiskey.
Oh, nice whiskey obviously finishes off there, but we all start off with a beer, we have our meal, a little bit of wine, and then now the kids are all on their P's. You know, one of them at least can drive us home.
I also love, as a dad, that you said you like seeing your children with partners and seeing another side come out from them.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard a dad say that about their daughters having boyfriends.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you, it was easier when Jack met Sophie than when Ella met Damo or when Abby met Lockie. But look, at the end of the day, I've learnt to just relax about those type of things. I could tell you a story off air because I don't want to embarrass my daughter Abby that's going on at the moment with her boyfriend. And I'm just sort of like, I thought I would struggle more, but I think I've probably mellowed a bit. And I also realised that, you know, your kids, they're not your kids for very long, you know. I want them to be independent. We've brought them up independent, strong kids, you know, go for it, have a crack at everything, travel, fall in love with strangers. My wife and I have always been like that ourselves. So, you know, it'd be silly to think that and want that from them and all of a sudden go, oh, actually, we just want you to stay at home with us. So it's a bit of a balance, but we're getting there.
No, love it, Gus. And from what you've just been saying then, it sounds like a lot of things there you're grateful for, which is great. And that's sort of a little segue into a bit of a challenge we got set last week by our guest, Scott Henderson. And he sort of said, Izzy and I challenged, hopefully our listeners, just to sort of write down three things you're grateful for before you go to bed. Have a little notepad. And look, people do it. And I personally got a lot out of it. And so, Iz, I'm just going to ask you, and you can get involved too if you want, Gus, but what were the, let's just go with last night to keep it relevant. What are the three things you're grateful for yesterday?
So I remembered when I was already in bed, so I had to get up and write it down. And Scott said we definitely had to write it, not think about it, which is good. It's about rewiring our brain to look at the positives in our day. And yesterday I got my bike serviced and it was awesome service, and they actually gave me a little bit of a discount. So I felt like, you know, that's just a reward for being a friendly person. It was a really lovely sunset. I took it for a ride around Centennial Park. And then the other thing was I was glad that, you know, I'd had lots of rest on this week off. What about you, love Hugo?
It. Yeah, love it. Look, for mine, and I've actually got them written here, and it's I seem to repeat myself sometimes with them, but I think that's all right.
That's a good thing. It shows you that those things are important in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, you know, the first one I had was my health, because I'm feeling great at the moment, which is awesome. I think that's when I'm feeling great, I take advantage of that, and I think this is bloody fantastic. So my health was the one I was grateful for. Ernie, my little dog, who's my little car, I'm always grateful for him. And then my partner's probably going to be quite annoyed that I had Ernie above her. But also my partner, and I think sometimes, and it sounds cliche because having that in my gratitude, but the thing she does for me as well, which sometimes I take for granted. But sorry, Amber, if you're listening, I'd Ernie above you, but it's just the way it is sometimes.
Oh, that's beautiful. They're all three beautiful things. And I can, because it's only last night, I played a game of tennis last night for the first time in 6 years. Like, I've been on this weight loss journey now since November. So I'm now sort of dropped under 115 kilos for the first time in 5 or 6 years.
Fantastic.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to have a game of tennis with another couple of mates that are battling a bit at the moment with their tummies, and another friend of ours. And we just had this best couple of sets of tennis. We had a beer in between two sets, and it was just beautiful. So for me, it was I was a lot of gratification around just being able to get out there again and realizing, you know, what have I been doing for all these years, whacking on the weight and everything? So that was great. And I'm always a massive, fan of my wife's, who's, you know, we've been 30 years together.
Wow.
26 years married as of December. So that was that. I'd always talk about Vix, but I'm also just thrilled that my son and his girlfriend made it home from Byron Bay. I know he can drive perfectly well. It's not him. It's everyone else on the road. And I heard that he made it back safe. So they're the three things for me.
Oh, that's special. No, that's lovely to hear. And I love my tennis as well, Gus. So maybe we'll...
Yeah. Well, let me drop another 10, Hugo, and then I'm up.
I'm not very good at it, but I love tennis. So maybe I like the idea of having a beer in between sets. So.
Yeah, well, I think that makes sense. And, you know, we're not going to win Wimbledon or anything, but we had a lot of fun last night and got a bit of a sweat up, so that was good.
That's fantastic, Gus. No, that's a great way to start off the episode, and great to hear that. And, look, I think a great place to start, and for those listening who might not know who Gus Warland is, they've probably hopefully heard of Gotcha for Life, but sometimes they might not know the amazing man behind Gotcha for Life, Gus. So growing up, let's sort of go way back to little Gus. what were you like growing up? What were the type of person you were? And yeah, give a bit of a picture for those listening.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate. I grew up about 3 or 4 of my first years in Tokyo. My dad was selling Travelodge hotels. So he was basically buying up parts of Tokyo, which are now, you know, very much not rice paddy fields that they were at the time. But we had 3 or 4 years. I went to an American school, loved it. And then I came back to the North Shore of Sydney, where I just, you know, had the best childhood, except for the fact that Dad left the family home when I was, too young. And, you know, I've worked that out with Dad now, but that was probably the only thing that sort of burst my bubble in all the time that I was growing up. Great friends, great school, loved everything. I was just, I really am one of those people that wear my heart on my sleeve, and I just see the positives in everything, and I just loved life. And my mum was just the most amazing lady. So I was...
What's her name, Gus?
Janelle. So Janelle lives in Killara. She's a ripper.
Hi, Janelle, if you listen.
Yeah. I'll tell her to listen.
Yeah, good.
She'd like you guys, there's no doubt, because there's a lot of warmth and kindness in this room, and that's what my mum's all about. And, you know, she definitely had some battles there. You know, she couldn't date anyone else. She absolutely adored my dad, and just, like, she couldn't think of being with anyone else, which is, you know, it's lovely to have that feeling for summer, but when it gets crushed, you know, it's a tough one. Because I said, Mum, you're so beautiful. You've got so not much to offer. I don't want you to be, once I left home, my brother and I don't want you to be lonely. But she's like, men are overrated. You know, I only loved your father and that's it. And she stuck to her guns.
She remained loyal to him.
She
even
did.
After he left.
I know. And in so many ways, it is absolutely beautiful. And I suppose I do remember when Dad eventually left, I remember talking to some mates at school. And they were like, oh, I wish my mum and dad would. All they do is scream at each other, or there's silence, or there's just, at least your mum and dad have made a call on it, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay, I suppose that's a different way of looking at it. But look, as a general rule, I had a great life until I was 18, went across to England, and I met my now wife, Vicky, at I was in a gap year at school. And she was actually going out with a bloke called Roger, who, you know, and I had a girlfriend as well. So we met, we were mates. Anyway, 3 or 4 years later, I've come back, done uni. She's gone to uni a little bit later. In her final years, final year of uni, I flew over to England and I asked her to marry me on the first day that I saw her after not seeing her for nearly 3 years.
And they say romance is dead. Oh, my goodness.
She told me to fuck off. That's exactly what she said. However, about a month later, she said, look, why don't we at least go out and see what happens. And, you know, within about a month, she said, I'd love to say yes. And we had a long engagement, and then we got married in 1994. And like I said, it's coming up 26 years. We had 8 pregnancies for 3 children. We went through a little bit of stuff there. Yep. Took a couple of years to have Jack. And then once Jack came, Ella came, and then Abby. And, you know, we've lived a very blessed life, really.
That's beautiful to hear.
From what I hear, you and your wife sound like a real team.
We are a good team, and exactly. And there is parts, no doubt, where you bumble through life at times and you don't have all the answers, and it's not all rip your clothes off and jump into bed. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. But I suppose for Vix, and, you know, moving forward now to Gotcha for Life, she was a school teacher, then she was a mother, and then the kids didn't need her as much. So there was a real period there, and I'm sure some of your listeners will sort of nod along to this. Where's your purpose, you know, when you've done so much sacrifice for everyone else, 3 children, then all of a sudden they're up and about, which is what you want, but then you're sitting there going, I wonder what the next, you know, 20 years of my life will be. And Gotcha for Life has not only filled a hole for her, but our kids now see mum in a whole different light. It's not just mum, it's actually this person that is running a part of this really cool foundation. So it's been a wonderful thing for both of us.
No, I love that, Gus, and we definitely will. You know, explore more of the Gotcha for Life part, because it is an exciting foundation and the amazing work you've done with that. But, you know, I just wanted to touch on a point you mentioned there throughout that, you know, that amazing sort of life you've had and been fortunate to live. But early on there, when you mentioned your father leaving early, you know, firstly, how old were you then? And then how did that impact you? You know, you talked about your mum, how it impacted her, but how did it impact you sort of losing that father figure growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I was about 10, but Dad had been very absent for many more years of that. And that was sort of the way it was back in the 70s, because if your father was like an executive for an international company, he'd go away for 3 or 4 months at a time. There wasn't that, you know, jumping on a plane and coming back. They went to Europe and they stayed there because it was just the cheapest way of doing it, or into Asia or into America. So Dad just wasn't around that much. But you know, mum was just so strong, incredibly strong. But I needed that because I do wear my heart on my sleeve. I wanted my mum around. Where my brother, a couple of years older, you know, was always really independent. And as soon as he could nick off, he nicked off, went to America, lived there for years. And, you know, he's had a fantastic life, my brother, but just very different cats. But for me, I found all my mates, older brothers, fathers, uncles, anyone sort of older than me, I really, really wanted to spend time with them. There was a piece of me missing, and I wanted to have that father figure that, you know, I ended up finding in my friend Angus, that, you know, we'll tell the listeners about, that, you know, Hugo, who was just this incredibly important person for me.
And on that, what was that like when you're talking about having that father figure, which ended up being Angus, and not only a father figure, but I understand, you know, one of your close mates and a mentor. What was it like when you got the news that he had tragically ended his own life, knowing that that was someone that, you know, was your father figure, was your mentor, and something that no one can really prepare for?
Yeah, it was the worst day. It really was. I was best man at a wedding down in Cornwall in England, and I was on the golf course. I got a phone call from a friend of mine, Andy Single. I remember it so well, and I took it. And I don't know why I took it, because I was on the golf course, and I was with the guy getting married and a few other groomsmen, and I was like, but for some reason, I took it. And Andy said, look, Angus is dead. And I went, what are you talking about? And he goes, yeah, no, he's dead. And I went, right. And then I just fell to the ground. I had no idea that he'd taken his own life. So the game of golf obviously finished, drove back to this beautiful castle where they were getting married. It was mostly unbelievable place I've ever been. Of course, I had to go to my friend and say, you know, I don't know if I can be best man today now. I can't just do a funny speech and all that stuff. He said, mate, no worries, well, no, whatever you need. And then my wife had heard from some other family members that Angus had taken his own life. So she was waiting for me when the cars arrived back at the hotel, and she goes, I need to tell you something. And that's when I went, that's just bullshit. There's just no way. People like Angus don't do this sort of stuff. And she's like, well, that's what I'm hearing. I'm like, that's rubbish. So I rang up the airline and I got on a plane that night, 11 o'clock. So I left maybe 3 or 4 hours later, because it's quite a trip from Cornwall up to London. So I did that, got on a plane and got home the next day, went and saw family, and then I went straight to the police. And I said, right, there's got to be some foul play here. Angus, there's just no way he would do something like that. And that's when the policeman sort of took me aside and said, I don't think you know too much about what happens here, brother. And he sat me down and explained it. And that was like a real shock to me. That, and then he explained what had happened and how they had found him and there was no foul play, and, you know, changed my life forever.
Hmm. And I think it's really important to talk about that people who suicide, they're not always depressed. And for some people, it's quite impulsive, or they aren't expressing how they're feeling. And that's why we need to talk about the conversations we're having today. We need to talk about suicide more, because people just can't think it's their best option.
Mm.
Because sometimes there are no warning signs. And I guess, how old were you at the time when this happened?
So it was about 11 years ago. So I was in my early 40s.
Yeah. And how did that feel for you, losing that person?
I was angry. I was really angry. You know, I was just like, how dare you? And there was a place in Palm Beach. He was president of Palm Beach Surf Club. So I went down there and I just walked around there and shouting and screaming. And people were like, what's Gus doing? I was just like, just need to shout and scream at him at a place where I know where he will be or has been so much. And that anger then turned into sadness, into disappointment, and then looking at his family, he left 3 beautiful children and a wife and the whole bit. So, and I understand that, you know, half the suicides are situational. They happen really quickly, you know. A spouse leaves, or there's an affair, or there's a bankruptcy, or whatever it might be. Blokes don't have the time to actually make a right decision, and they go and make the ultimate bad decision based on a very temporary situation. So that's what I'm talking about now, is building up that gotcha for life friend and building up that emotional muscle. So when that does happen, the first thing you do is phone your mate to say, mate, can you believe what's happened? And you can shout, scream and do whatever with them. At least they can then come and be your support.
Yeah, absolutely, Gus. And did you know that he was seeing any help, or if he had told anybody?
No, nothing.
And did he leave a note?
Nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
No note, no one knows. I went back over his Palm Pilot. Like, we were talking back Palm Pilot day, no mobiles. Looking at his laptop and just trying to find anything, and we just couldn't find anything.
And I think, in a way, like I unfortunately lost one of my best mates during my second year army training. And I think I told you this offline, Gus, and he unfortunately ended his own life. And you know, he was getting the help. We did know about it. He had previous attempts that we were there for, and we took him to the hospital. He did leave a note when he did go. And it's always got me, because this note was very, very detailed. And I've still got this note, and I reviewed it the other day when it was his anniversary. And it's such a powerful letter. But to know that, you know, he had planned it in advance, it's, I don't know if that makes it easier or not, but I just find it's fascinating. That, you know, that's a young guy, 22, with the whole, you know, his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah.
And he had planned this. And unfortunately, this is obviously why we're chatting about this today. And as Iz said, it is too common. It happens too often.
Angus had this huge circle round in his diary, a paper diary. And that was his third child, Henry, had just finished his last HSC exam. So he was at the Greengate Hotel in Killara having a few beers, and his dad drove past there to go to Tarramarra from Ryde, and then did what he did. So he could have easily popped into the pub and put $50 behind the bar and said, hey, boys, you know, next few beers on me, well done, Henry, and gone home. But he didn't do that. And the circle in the diary was that was the date that he was angling for. That's the day when his last child had been educated. And I think that for him was like, okay, that's my line in the sand moment.
And for you, Gus, afterwards, you said you were angry.
Hmm.
What helped you get closure and heal from that?
I don't think I've absolutely nailed it down, to be honest with you. Obviously, time, you know, does help with everything. But I went straight into a TV show that I was about to start within a few days of that. And I thought, right, I've just got to put my head down and get into this, because I'd left Toshiba as a computer salesman at 38. I was only a few years into this new life of mine, and I was like, wow, I can't muck this up, you know. So I need to be present on this show, and I was the host of it as well. So it's not like I could sort of fax it in. I really had to go for it. So that helped me, I suppose. I worked really hard for 10 weeks or so, and then I got on the promotional trail, and then I was in Australia, and then I went back to England, and that's when it hit me again. I had a really tough couple of days, and my wife obviously knew why, so she helped me. You know, I think one of the worst things blokes do, or anyone can do actually, is to worry alone. And I'm really good at saying, look, I'm just no good today. I need you to help me. And, you know, the last time I had one of those was in March this year, just after the first lockdown. I watched 60 odd episodes of The West Wing back to back. And my wife said, perhaps we need to talk, babe. You know, I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, literally been watching TV for about 3 days.
I made a meme for our Instagram page the other day that was like, friend, like, I've been worried about you. Is everything okay? And it's like, me pouring vodka over my cornflakes. Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. What's the problem? I'm fine. You know, but the thing is that if I didn't have someone, or if I hadn't shared that, or if I had just put the mask on and got through the morning with my kids and my wife and then went off to work, in inverted commas, drive off somewhere, and then, you know, be sad at the beach or be sad driving around, you know, that's what I'm worried about, people worrying alone. But, you know, I was man enough to speak up and say, you know what, I'm going to tell my wife how I feel and she's going to help me through it.
And at this time in your life, did you know much about mental health? I guess I'm wondering
nothing.
Where you learnt those skills that you could express to your wife, because not everyone has them, and that's, you know, what we're here about today.
Yeah.
Was this the start of your kind of, it sounds cliche, mental health journey?
It really wasn't. It really wasn't. I didn't pick up on it at all. It wasn't till later when I did the Man Up program. So that was about 7 or 8 years later. So I basically sat in silence pretty much for most of that time. And then I went, you know what? I'm going to start talking about it on Triple M Radio, the blokiest radio station on the planet, on the blokiest show on the planet. If I can talk about not having the answers, if I can talk about worrying alone, if I can talk about crying, if I can talk about not being able to manage my emotions, and people might take the mickey, and they did, but predominantly most blokes go, you know what, Gus, thank you for that. That's exactly what I feel, and that's what I do, and that's my actions. And I'm like, you've actually made it normal for me. And I went, well, you've made it normal for me too, because I wasn't that sure. So I think that was when the journey really started. And then the Man Up program itself was just, you know, life-changing for me.
And it's interesting hearing you say that, Gus. And I've heard you say, you know, bad things happen when good people do nothing.
Correct.
And it very much sounds like, you know, what you went through, even though back then you didn't realise that was you discovering your mental health, and you went through your anger and the different grieving processes. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, you're in that position on that radio station where you thought, nope, I want to do something here. Mm. And I find that quite powerful, because I think, you know, it's what we're trying to do on this podcast, and it's what, you know, it's what Got You For Life stands for. And I think seeing all these people like yourself, you know, in a position of influence, and it's fantastic with the whole good people doing something, but a good thing as well.
Well, there's a lot of good people out there that just don't quite know what to do, or they're bumbling around in the dark a bit, wondering to find the right thing to do. So if there's one thing that I've learned in the last few years is give everyone the benefit of the doubt. And take 10% off your expectations. So it's chucking away perfect and going, you know what? I can do that well. I can do that well. That's going to needs a bit of work. And that one's terrible. Being open, honest and vulnerable is the manliest thing you can do.
I'm not trying to like get you my number at the end, guys, but I will confirm, like, you know, it is just so nice when people can communicate, and it's just such an attractive quality, expressing vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I think we struggle so much as individuals to express vulnerability, and in men and women, I think often we gender stereotype that it's men.
Definitely.
Men can't express themselves and men are told to toughen up. A lot of women are the same. You know, it's just so attractive when other people are vulnerable. And I think we need to recognise how much we like seeing it in other people, and then not be so scared to do it ourselves.
Exactly. And I'm going down that point, when I say to blokes, oh, I don't want to be that whinging bastard that brings the group down. I don't want to be that person that is not happy, or the bloke that says, oh, I need your help all the time. Well, what happens if the roles are reversed? Mm. Do you want your mates to say that to you? Absolutely. What would you do? Drop everything. Okay, so if that's locked away, why can't you ask for help and them drop everything and help you out?
Love it.
So it really is... It, we need to simplify mental health, which is why I like to call it mental fitness, and just normalize it and just let people think it's just like talking about having a few COVID kilos or stuff. It's not as simple as that, but let's talk about it in that way.
It's funny you say that exact thing, Gus. When we're grabbing a coffee before, I was saying, and from what I, you know, the research and reading I was doing into you, and I'm like, what I love most about Gus is that you are so good at that. You are so good at simplifying this whole mental health concept, this mental fitness, what we need to do. It's not that difficult, which is interesting. I'm just interested to ask you, because you're talking about the whole, you know, vulnerability and expressing your emotions. When was it the last that you had a cry?
What time is it? It's 3:41 in the afternoon. So I cried at 1:30 and 1:40 in Centennial Park.
There you go.
By an oak tree with a mate of mine who I was talking to about some stuff that was pretty heavy. And I was just giving him an understanding of what I'm going through at the moment with a few things, because he's worried about me and my workload and balance and stuff. So,
yeah. Well, you know.
And now, right, 3:42.
I can see the tears, but you know what? I love that, Gus, and it's so powerful to see you that. And you just mentioned the part about, you know, your balance being way off, and you are very caring. You are constantly doing things for other people, even coming to this podcast, going straight off to another appointment.
That was because of you, mate. If I hadn't met you or spoken to you before, I no way I'm here today.
Thank you, Gus.
I'd never met you, but I honestly think you're. Honestly, could be someone very, very important for Australia moving forward, especially when it comes to Defence Force, that people love you guys so much. We're so proud of you, but there's so many of you in pain, and you could be a huge beacon for that, and I want to try to make that happen. So
thanks, Gus.
That's why
you're going to make me cry.
I'm going to start crying too.
Let's go to see have a little emotional tears, Gus.
I was going to say the doctor in me has to chirp in and say crying actually is really good for stress relief. It releases endorphins and it makes us feel better. And whenever I have patients that cry, they always apologize, and I say stop, do not apologize. It is always a good cry, you know, and you always feel better after a good cry. There's no such thing as bad emotions, you know. They're emotions, and they're us telling our, you know, they're our body telling us how we're feeling. And I think we all need to learn to honour our emotions a little bit more.
I like
which
that.
Is kind of going into the topic of mental fitness. And maybe it would be good for you to now tell us a little bit about Gotcha for Life.
Yeah.
And what the skills and attributes you're trying to teach people.
Yeah, I mean, I had obviously one of the great soapboxes at Triple M talking to blokes all the time. You know, we have about 600,000 people listening on at 8:15 in the morning. So at 8:10, let's start talking about stuff that's real, some gravity, you know.
This is just like music to my ears. I love it.
Well, believe me, I did 11 years of it, and I reckon only in the last 3 of those I felt confident enough to even bring it up in my own meetings. You know, and I was in the show, and breakfast radio is all about content. Everything is content always. You've got to think of anything that happens to you in your life. How's that actually going to, how can I put that on the radio? Because you want moments where people are listening, nodding along going, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah, I know what he means by that. And then you feel a part of the show. You're building your family and your fan base. So for me, that was, took me a long time to get there, but eventually I got there, and I found so many blokes were like, I need that information. I want that information. So I'm like, okay, well, Man Up had gone really well. I tried to make Man Up too, went to the ABC, went to a few other places, no money. I went, okay. They said, it's pretty heavy too. Why don't you leave it a couple of years? I said, okay. So anyway, we're 4 or 5 years on and still no budget for Man Up 2. So I'm talking to Movember
bloody
at the moment.
Bloody budget cuts to the ABC.
Well, that's one thing. And also just other people, like they just want to make a sure thing winner. And that's where you get your, you know, your housewives, your crap TV, all that sort of stuff.
The Bachelor.
Yeah, and all that stuff. And that's fine. Great. You know, people need to sit down on the sofa and switch off completely. I get it.
I definitely watched The Bachelor last night.
So I get all that. And, you know, and people would say if you don't like sport, well, you know, all this live sport. But tonight, you know, I've got to do a thing tonight, but I'll go home tonight. I'm so exhausted, but I will sit down and watch the Roosters and Souths on tape, and I'll switch everything off to make sure no one gives me the score and all that stuff. So everyone's got their thing. But I'd love to make Man Up too. I really think it's important to do that, especially with what's going to happen in the next few years with COVID and the welfare tap being turned off and so forth. But getting back to Gotcha for Life, I went, righto, I've got this great opportunity. So I'm going to start a foundation. So I started the foundation, surrounded myself with some really cool people and said, right, well, I'm going to try to make a difference. And Tom Harkin, who's the guy that is like a boy whisperer, he spoke to the kids.
A boy whisperer.
He really is. He's quite an amazing young man. And I said, I want to make 1,000 of him. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, Hugo, you are one of those 1,000 in my head. As soon as I meet certain people, I just go, because you can't teach this stuff. It's either got to be in them, because kids in particular will just see all the through the BS. Mm. If there's a good presenter up there who presents a beautiful workshop, kids will go, he didn't believe that. He's just learned a script.
And it's not what it's about, is it?
That's right. And kids will work that out. So
I think it's energy. I'm really strong on energy and the energy I get from people, and you can't fake that.
You can't fake it. That's right. So, in 4 years, I've got 13 out of my 1,000 that I'm going for, and they're expensive.
Maybe number 14 over here.
Very expensive as well.
At least I'm not the unlucky 13.
No, you are not. You are not. But it's expensive as well to get them around the countryside and get them their own mental fitness okay, because you can't do too many of them in a row, because you're taking on all this stuff, because you are a certain type of person that, you know, is fair income and real and authentic. So I basically started going, you know what, anyone working in prevention, I want to try to help you in some way. So whether that's with my network or whether that's with funding or marketing or sales, whatever it might be. And as I said, $5 million we've raised in just under 4 years, which is awesome. I'm so proud of it. And I'm just now that I've left Brekkie Radio, I'm like, right, let's have a real crack at this now.
I love it. And I love the, prevention through connection and that whole connection piece. And ultimately that's what it's all about. And one of the key themes with the Gotcha for Life is having that Gotcha for Life mate. You know, that's someone where, you know, we chatted about this, where it's, 3 in the morning on a Sunday morning and you can just give them a call. And there you kind of got you for life, mate.
And I think warts and all. It's warts and all. It is no one is judging you. They love you no matter what. And you've got a real friendship, not a mateship. And I talk about this a lot in Australia, that we talk about mates a lot. But are they friends, you know? And there's a lot of blokes out there that I don't want to be a friend, but I love going to the footy with them. I've got a certain level of friendship with them, but they're not that person. And you don't need to have a lot of them. You just need at least one of them. And I suppose that's what I'm talking about when we talk about Gotcha for Life, because I believe that suicide is a death of loneliness. I believe that life thinks, you know, that it's okay if life went on without me. And, you know, the thought of any of my friends feeling that way, which is why I do what I do now, which is hug them as much as I can. You know, I'll just send little notes to them every now and again. There's nothing quite like having someone contact you to make you feel like they're thinking about you. So you're not alone anymore. And I honestly believe if you think too much in your own head, especially blokes, we fuck it up all the time.
Yeah, and you gave me a big hug before, Gus, and it was a great hug. So thanks.
I'm a good hugger. I've been told.
You know, who's your Gotcha for Life mate or mates? I should say Gotcha for Life friends that you.
Yeah, well, I've got a few. I mean, Hugh Jackman is probably number one. He and I speak every day, whether it's FaceTime or a text or something. His life is extraordinary, and has been, and he was always going to be extraordinarily successful in whatever he decided to do. But
you still speak every day?
Every day. And like tomorrow morning in particular, we have a 45-minute chat. We have to lock it in, you know. And I ring him on the way to my radio show that I do on a Saturday morning. And he's at the moment in the Hamptons and he's in a beautiful place and his life's great. But he wakes up every morning same as everyone else, you know. 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10, 3 out of 10 some days. Pressure, stuff that's going on, people trying to jip him, people trying to throw stuff at him, people trying to bring him down. And he just looks at his beautiful wife and kids and goes, right, okay, I'm a 5 out of 10 now. I'm going to have a shower, going to go have some exercise, come back to brekkie, 7 out of 10. If he can hang at 7 out of 10, he's a winner all day. And that's what we talk about. And he hasn't got many people that he can talk to like that. And we went to kindy together at Pimble Public, known each other for 47 years. So that's a lock-in, but I've got another bunch of mates and come walking with them one morning. You know, we meet at Collaroy, love those boys, and we talk everything from complete nonsense to our relationships, our children, stuff going on in our lives. And I get home at about 8 o'clock after having some brekkie and a cuppa, walk about 8 kilometres, and I'm ready to go. You know, I'm ready to recharge at the world.
I love it. And you mentioned Hugh Jackman before, Gus. And I think, and when you're talking about when he's having a 3 out of 10 or a 4 out of 10, and it's one of the themes behind the uniform. It's because, you know, ultimately some of the guests we try and have on and some of the conversations we talk about is exactly that. It's often, you know, some people can have this uniform, whether it's literal or a metaphor.
Yeah.
So someone like Hugh Jackman, who people on the outside look as having this perfect life.
Well, he's a wolf as well. So
well, that's true.
He's actually a Wolverine.
He is Wolverine. So he can't die, which is pretty incredible.
Feels pretty crappy around full moon time every
Not
month.
Terrific at that.
Yeah, true. But yeah, it is true, though, that he can still have off days and he can still have days where he struggles. And I think it's bringing it a bit closer to home with, say, Australian sports athletes or whatever. People see someone have a bad game of footy or whatever, and they think that they're not a normal person. They're not a normal human being, and they're immune to getting depressed or immune to feeling down. So I'm really fascinated with that concept of the end of the day. And I think Braith and Nasta spoke about this, saying we're all human beings. Doesn't matter who you are, we're all human beings.
Well, someone like Braith, for instance, who's a good mate of mine, he was called the most overrated player in all those polls for years and years and years. He won premierships. He led my side. He went to the Tigers as well as being at the Bulldogs. Unbelievable pressure on him as a young kid coming through, good looking. People just ripe for the picking to have a go, right? And people are just nasty. Mm. So, you know, he's good on him, and he went through some stuff with his father and so forth that we spoke about only the other day around Are You OK Day. I mean, Steve Smith's another example. You know, when he did what happened in South Africa, you know, he came back here, he phoned me up and said, look, I want to tell my story and I want to tell it to school kids. So, you know, he had 100 hours of community service to do, and he did it every single hour with me. It was just the most brilliant 40-odd schools, going into schools, him standing up there and just going, kids, I've made a real mistake and I don't know if I'm going to come out the other side. Of course, we know now that he had a great Ashes series and he was obviously straight back in, but there was a lot of uncertainty there. Mm. And to see him being so open, honest and vulnerable, and young kids just looking up going, oh, it's okay if you make a mistake. You just got to own it. Okay. Learning these life lessons from someone that is just to them a complete hero is the best thing. I said to Steve, I said, mate, you'll never save a life taking a catch or scoring runs, but you've saved some lives 100%. First school we went to, two kids came rushing to the headmaster about 5 hours after we had left. And he rang us that night and said two boys, one had bought a rope at Bunnings and the other had been putting a cocktail of drugs together from his grandma and granddad. And he was just going to take the lot with a bottle of vodka. That was both going to happen Friday night. So that community, that school would have been absolutely ripped apart. And they both ran in and just yelled it out. Like they couldn't even communicate properly. They just, it was like building up. And they went, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And they pretty much did it within about 10 minutes of each other.
That is.
And those two boys are absolutely fine now, gone through some stuff. And I just looked at Steve and said, you just saved two boys' lives. Like this morning you woke up, those boys were going to kill themselves that night. They're not now because of you. Mm. And he just went, right. And I said, that's the power of being open, honest and vulnerable. That's it right there, Steve. And of course, that story, we should magnify that to the cows come home.
Yes.
Because every person, like you say, it does not discriminate, this black dog or whatever you want to call it. It's always kicking around and we need to be educated on how to deal with it.
I don't think words can really say how powerful that story is. And it just really exemplifies the power of connection and communication. And even you talking about suicide, like something, you know, Hugo and I are both ambassadors for the Movember charity. And I just think it's fucking madness that, you know, for Hugo and I, if we're going to die of something, statistically, it's suicide. Mm. And we don't talk about it.
Yeah. And it's the S word.
Yeah.
It's the new S word. You can say shit on Triple M, but you can't say suicide.
Yeah. And
you believe that?
Mm.
It's actually a fact.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
You know, I talk about, you know, I as a doctor, you're talking about cancers, we're talking about car accidents and all these other things. But, you know, that's what Hugo and I are most likely to die of, and there's such a taboo. And you talked about the black dog, about depression. But the other thing, you know, life is hard. Shit happens, and it's going to keep on happening. And something I am really passionate about talking about, it's not trying to create a life that shit doesn't happen, because you'd be trying to create a world where it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
It's about giving people the skills and the connections to deal with those hard times. And I think that's what you're really trying to do at Gotcha for Life. And you talk about mental fitness.
Yeah.
And I'd love you to explain what mental fitness means to you.
Well, I think mental health has got this sort of real negative connotation. It goes straight to the bottom of the barrel.
Mental well-being's okay, but mental health is stigmatised.
That's right. But even mental well-being, if you're talking to the blokes that I talk to a lot, they just go, that's just a whole lot of hobwash.
Green smoothies and yoga.
Yeah, exactly. So that they just don't even though if you sat them down in a safe environment and explained it to them, 100% they'd go, yeah, no, I get it. But if you just say it or they keep hearing it, actually a bit of a turnoff to what I'd call, in inverted commas, the average Aussie bloke. So they need to have something that makes sense for them. So everyone talks about physical fitness, and we could all be probably physically fitter. We could eat a bit cleaner, drink less grog, move a little more. So if you came home from COVID, came home and into the hospital and people go, oh, you put a few kilos on. You go, yeah, yeah. And I go, you know what? There's a personal trainer at the moment doing 50% discount. This gym down here is this. Why don't you get HelloFresh delivered? Whatever it might be, you would be inundated with all this positive stuff for you to lose those kilos.
I'd also probably punch them in the drawer if they told them that.
I know, it should, but blokes get that all. I get that all the time.
I think it doesn't matter. You're never going to be able to please everyone. It's just the truth of it.
If you're pleasing everyone, you're probably not doing it real. You know, because you're trying to please everyone. So I prefer to have someone, you know, love me or hate me. Like you said earlier, life is hard. Shit gets thrown at you. If you're in that grind, you just got to fight.
Hey, look, Gus, mate, we obviously, you know, we will look to, before we get to your challenge you're going to set us, and we obviously would love to literally have you here for a, you know, 5-hour interview, but we know that's not possible. So I do just want to, with everything we've kind of talked about and we've weaved through, and like we touched on earlier on, what I love about you is that you've got this simple way to connect with people about mental fitness, and it's not complicated, but more needs to be done. And like you touched on, the awareness component's there. If you like, people know about that. Mm. But the statistics of, you know, 8 people dying a day of suicide, 6 of whom are men, that's not decreasing. You know, we want it's if anything, it's slightly increasing. So what's to kind of wrap that whole messaging up with the Gotcha for Life vision, messaging, where you see yourself, where you see Gotcha for Life? What's that parting message do you want to put out there?
One line: don't worry alone. And it's so simple to say, but if you don't worry alone, just think about that for a second. So every worry you have, you're going to share with at least someone. It's as simple as that. I honestly believe, I've said it before, suicide is the death of loneliness. You feel, you know what, I'm out of here. No one cares if I'm here or not. If you're having any sort of thought that is slightly negative, good or bad, sometimes it can be good and bad as well, you can sit down and go, you know what, I'm going to not worry alone, but I'm also going to tell everyone when something good happens to me as well. Mm-hmm. Who cares if you're seen as a bit of a show-off? If someone says you're a show-off, they're probably not your mate. It's a good way to cull some mates as well. So for me, it's all about being real and being open, honest and vulnerable. And if you do that, and if we can teach every Aussie bloke to do that, then we're in a much better place.
I love that. Don't worry alone. And I think, you know, if someone is listening right now who is struggling, they're in a really
tell
dark
someone.
Place. What is that? What can they do? Listening to this right now, listening to Gus's voice, what's
tell
the
someone.
First thing they can do?
Please go and tell someone. Tell someone how you feel exactly now. And I guarantee you there'll be people going, you know what? I feel that way too. I used to feel that way. You know what? I have days where I feel that way. All those conversations start happening. Then you look around and go, you know what? I'm not the only one going through this stuff. And you're like, no, mate. But most of us are putting on a mask all the time. Mm. Most of us aren't being truthful.
Putting on a uniform.
Putting on a uniform. And that's what we do. And that's what we've been told to do. And that's what the man rule is. Mm. So we're changing it, right? This is line in the sand time to go, stats are shit. We're going to do something different about it now.
Love
so that's
that.
What it is.
Love that. So it's such key powerful messaging. And like you said earlier, being open and vulnerable is the manliest thing you can do. And it's
bloody hard.
And it is difficult. But simply, well, not simply, but by telling someone is such a good place to start. So look, Gus, it's some valuable, valuable take-homes. And look, I personally got a lot out of that. But like we do with all our guests, and you're a man of wisdom and what you've learned over the years. But I'm interested to hear what your weekly challenge is for Izzy and me and our listeners. That's something we can do.
Okay. I'm
last
ready.
Week it was to set a gratitude. Oh, you don't even need time to
prepare. Oh, he's ready. I like this.
I'm ready.
Let's go. Here it is. What is it?
Yeah, this could be the most underwhelming one you've ever heard of. But in a week's time, I'll be listening to your responses. Make your bed.
Oh my goodness, that is actually something. I read the book, the book that says make your belt, you know, the one by the army officer.
It was, yes. Mate,
I read that book on holiday. It changes your life.
It is. Well, I actually saw him live say that story. So this is a real sergeant major sort of guy. And at the end he goes, make your bed every day, because at least you've actually attempted something and you've actually nailed it. So it's pretty easy. have the worst day of your life. You then come back, you go into your room, your bed's made.
Love it.
At least you can start fresh again and hopefully the next day. It's so simple. But most things in life can be simple. It's us that complicate them. It's us that put all these big words in and make everything sound as if it's a lot more important. Don't worry alone and make your bed. That's it.
Perfect theme of the episode, Gus. Don't worry alone and make your bed. And people listening to that, we can't hold you accountable. We're not going to stalk you outside your window to see if you've made your bed.
But I would love to do an episode on the mental health benefits of habits and routine and the science and neuroscience behind why making your bed is so important. But we don't have time.
No,
so that can be for another episode.
I love it, Gus. I love it. And I think we will wrap things up there. And I just wanted to do a fine little thing because I think I got so much from when you told me this during our Zoom call the other day when you mentioned the whole, you know, the connection piece, and connection's massive with you. And you said you tell people to pull their phone out. So if you're driving, maybe don't do this. But if you're listening to this podcast, this is what Gus told me to do, and I've actually done it. Pull your phone out, send a mate or someone a message. Tell them
someone is in your contacts, but you haven't spoken to them for a month.
And what do you say? What do you say?
And you say, I love you. And you write, I love you properly. You don't put an emoji, young person, emojis and stuff in, or L-U-V. It's L-O-V-E. I love you. I miss you. Look forward to seeing you soon. Kiss, hug, kiss, hug.
I love you. I miss you. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Kiss, hug, kiss, hug. So you're getting a little bit vulnerable. Right off the top, it's the love thing, and you've got the kiss, hug, kiss, hug. Now, you've already picked the person before I've told you what to say. So you've picked that person. You haven't spoken to them over a month. Sometimes it might be a year. You send it and you wait and see what the response is. It's either you're drunk. Are you drunk? The response you get back. Was this for me? Or I love you too.
And so it's I love you. I miss you. Kiss, hug, kiss.
Look forward to seeing you soon. Kiss, hug, kiss.
I love you. I miss you. Look forward to seeing you soon.
And you'll get the responses. Are you drunk? Was this for me? Or just thinking about you. That's the nicest message I've got. I can't believe that's come at the right time for me. It just breaks down all these barriers. And I say to corporates when we do it, every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, a little alarm in your phone goes off and goes, one more person to contact. That's 50 people a year. If they're in your contact list, you know them, right? There's some reason for that. So pick 50 people out, or if not, start deleting a few people out of your contact list. Stop complicating your life.
There you go. Great way to finish, Gus. And I love you, mate, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Good on you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Gus. It was such a pleasure.
It's a pleasure.